Hello and welcome to Texas Scorecard Radio. I'm your host, Kerry Cheshire. In this week's episode, we'll be talking about two major retirements out of the Texas House that'll have a big impact on the political landscape all across Texas. Next, we'll head up to the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex and talk about taxpayers' efforts to kill a bloated bureaucracy at the ballot box. And speaking of that ballot box, we'll also be talking about the constitutional amendments that all Texas voters will be deciding on November 7th. We'll also have an interview with State Representative Briscoe Kane, a conservative lawmaker who's leading the fight for free speech. And last but not least, a commentary from Michael Quinn Sullivan. So joining us here in 1836 Studios is Zach Maxwell of Empower Texans. Zach, tell us what happened in the Texas House earlier this week and why it matters to Texans.
Huge victory for conservatives this week, where Speaker Joe Strauss, who's been a big opponent of conservative legislation for years, has officially announced that he is retiring from the Texas House Representatives, which means that he will no longer be the speaker, which means we will have a new speaker this session. In addition to that, his one of his committee chairmen and anti-pro-life legislation, et cetera, Byron Cook, is also going to be retiring.
Yeah, you know, it's a big news for Texans where you have the man at the top and really kind of his apprentice, his consigliere, his hatchet man, announcing that he's retiring from the Texas legislature as well. And these are two individuals that came to power in 2009 with the assistance from Democrats. Isn't that right, Zach?
That's correct. They actually gathered at Byron Cook's house on Polo Road, commonly known as the Polo Road Gang, where a few Republicans got together, decided who was going to be teaming up with the Democrats and electing the next speaker. And that is how Joe Strauss originally got his power and has had it ever since.
Well, and since he's taken power from 2009 onward, he's really been the biggest barrier to conservative reform in the Texas legislature. Just this special session, he called Governor Greg Abbott's agenda horse manure. And the Texas House has been the killing field for school choice, for spending limits, for property tax reform, for the issues that voters care about all across the Lone Star State. And Zach, so far, we've seen a whole bunch of grassroots activists get really excited about this, get really engaged in the process. But really, this was kind of a victory that they've already won. This might have been won in the March primary if it hadn't been announced earlier because of all the good work that they've been doing. Talk a little bit about what's going on at the county level with all of these GOPs announcing that they had no confidence in Speaker Strauss and they were the ones kind of pushing him out.
That's right, Kerry. I think that he saw the writing on the wall with this one. I mean, there were countless, I believe over 50 county executive committees, Republican executive committees that filed official resolutions wanting to censure Representative Joe Strauss and Byron Cook, for that matter. There were a few across the state that did that as well. But it all started in Representative or Speaker Joe Strauss's home district in Bexar County in San Antonio, where they filed a resolution of no confidence in Speaker Strauss. And that sparked a grassroots fire across the entire state.
Well, that's right, Zach. And this is going to be the first time that the grassroots really has an ability to play into the speaker's race. Of course, you know, none of this will be decided barring a special session called by Greg Abbott until January of 2019. But it's the first time that all of these grassroots, all of these tea parties will be able to have an input on the process with their lawmakers and their elected officials. You know, when Joe Strauss took power, there were no Tea Parties in the United States. He kind of beat the Tea Party movement just by a hair, and that's the reason why he's been able to stay in so long. So talk a little bit about how voters can get engaged, what they should be talking to their legislators about, and what issues you think are going to play a big impact in this speaker's race.
You know, I think that the first thing that everyone needs to do is they need to talk to their legislator and see how he or she feels about the speaker's race. Right now, we have two challengers that have stepped up officially. Representative John Zerwas, who is famous for wanting to bring Obamacare into Texas, and Representative Phil King, who was the first to step up while Joe Strauss was still planning on running again. I think that they should reach out and see how their legislator feels about them, see what issues that they care about or what they're looking for in a speaker candidate, because as we all know that it's not a statewide race, it's between 150 members.
Well, that's right. It's only between 150 members, but every grassroots activist has a big impact in how their lawmaker votes. I think there are a whole lot of issues that are going to come into play here in terms of the legislative priorities of the Republican Party of Texas and in terms of citizens all across the state holding their lawmakers accountable through the primary election. So thanks so much for joining us, Zach.
Thank you, Kerry.
And now we'll head on out to our West Texas Bureau and check in with Lauren Mallier on what's going to be on Midlander's November ballot this election. Lauren, what's going on in Midland?
Hey, Kerry. So in addition to the 7 constitutional amendments that everyone will be voting on in the state, Midlanders will see a $100 million road bond on their ballot. And how it's going to look on the ballot is there's going to be a Proposition A, and that'll be to fund roads, and then a Proposition B, which will be to fund the utility infrastructure underneath the roads. So both of those are going to be equivalent to $100 million, and that's going to be a property tax-supported bond. So if it passes, people will see an increase in their property taxes.
Wow, really interesting. I think we've already seen property tax rates soar all across the state. I think out in Midland, all the other taxing entities have been increasing their rates as well. How will this affect taxpayers' bills?
Right, so the average $250,000 home in Midland is going to see an approximate tax increase annually of about $100.
Wow, $100. That's on top of the increases that they're already paying. That's on top of the appraisals that they've already seen. I think voters across the state, across all demographics, are interested in paying for roads. It's kind of a core function of government that really cuts across party lines. But was this Midland's only solution?
It wasn't, and you're completely right. I think people want road infrastructure to be addressed, especially in Midland. When we have our economy very dependent on the oil and gas industry, you have a lot of oil and gas traffic, which creates wear and tear on the roads, and then obviously extreme weather out in West Texas. So people want roads to be addressed. I think the real debate is in the funding. And I think a lot of people probably don't know that cities actually have two options to fund road maintenance. They have a bond, which is what the city is placing on the ballot right now, and then also a sales tax method that they could use.
Really interesting, and I think voters across the state, nobody really minds paying the sales tax, and I think right now in Midland, actually, the sales tax has gone down from 8.25% to 8%. Is that correct?
Correct, right. So Midland City Council actually placed a sales tax item on the ballot in May, and it was a 4B sales tax, which is focused on paying for park sports facilities. It would have also gone to subsidize the current sports complex in Midland, and voters turned it down. So it dropped our sales tax to 8%, and which is that quarter cent is what they actually could have placed on this November's ballot. And what they could have done is had it be essentially a road maintenance sales tax, which according to the state is just a quarter cent consumption tax that would go specifically towards roads. But instead, they went the bond route.
Right. Well, thanks so much, Lauren. Midlanders are going to have to be sure to go all the way down the ballot. This will be at the very bottom of the ballot for them. Two propositions totaling $100 million, something that everyone should scrutinize and take seriously. Next, we'll head on up to the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex and ask, how bad does a government bureaucracy have to be to get shut down? Dallas County voters are about to decide, and Aaron Anderson has the story. Aaron, how are you?
I'm great, Kerry. Thanks.
So tell us what's going on up in Dallas County right now. What is this that voters are deciding about with Dallas County schools?
Well, yes, Kerry, on the ballot for Dallas County voters is a vote to shut down Dallas County schools, which, by the way, is not a school. It's actually a taxpayer-subsidized school bus agency and not a very good one.
Right. I think we've seen stories all throughout, our paper, the Texas Scorecard, the Dallas Morning News, and other things about how bad, how unreliable, how unsafe and corrupt the whole institution is. Can you talk a little bit about that?
That's right. The issues are myriad with this government bureaucracy. It has a very poor safety record compared to other bus providers, unreliable service, only a 66% on-time rate, overpriced compared to other providers, and financial mismanagement that really borders on corruption. A lot of very shady deals done at taxpayer expense, leading the agency to be near the brink of bankruptcy.
Right. Well, I know you've been covering a lot of those issues on our website, texasscorecard.com. Talk a little bit about what would happen if this were to pass, if voters were to abolish Dallas County schools. I think most ISDs up there don't currently use Dallas County schools, but what about those who do? Would they still have bus service?
Well, yes, they would, Carrie. And Dallas ISD, which is the largest school district that uses DCS bus service, has already made plans to provide bus service to its students in the case of DCS being shut down by the voters, and at a lower cost than the $50 million they currently pay to DCS.
Wow, Aaron. What I think has been kind of most interesting about this whole fight has been the bipartisan opposition to Dallas County Schools. I mean, you've had everyone from conservative lawmaker Matt Rinaldi to Dallas Mayor Mike Rawlings, Don Huffines, and the Dallas Morning News all on the same page, all saying to abolish Dallas County Schools. Who is supporting Dallas County Schools right now?
Well, Carrie, about the only ones supporting Dallas County Schools, not surprisingly, are the DCS employees, the unionized bus drivers, and the unions that back those drivers, TSTA and NEA.
Wow. Well, when do voters get to have their say? Tell me this is on a uniform election date and not on some weird day where voters won't get a say. Tell me this is on a date that voters are going to go out in mass and have a say on this important issue.
Yes, it is, Carrie. Election day is Tuesday, November 7th. The proposition to shut down Dallas County Schools will be the last item on the ballot. So Dallas County voters need to go all the way down to the end of the ballot. And if they want to shut down Dallas County Schools, they will need to vote against Prop A.
Well, thanks, Aaron. Speaking of that November ballot, Texans all across the Lone Star State will get to vote on 7 proposed amendments to the state's constitution, and Texans for Fiscal Responsibility has a recommendation on each of them. The first up is Proposition 1, a cleanup amendment that would change one already approved by Texas voters in 2011 and authorize property tax exemptions for certain partially disabled veterans or their surviving spouses whose homes were donated to them by a charity for less than market value. Texans for Fiscal Responsibility is recommending that Texans vote yes in favor of Proposition 1. Proposition 2 is an amendment that will trim regulations concerning how much Texans can borrow through home equity loans. As you can imagine, Texans for Fiscal Responsibility supports the free market and recommends that Texans vote in favor of Proposition 2 as well. Proposition 3 is an amendment that would eliminate holdover appointments by removing office holders from their positions at the conclusion of their terms rather than waiting for them to be filled by appointment. This is a major problem in Texas, and Texans for Fiscal Responsibility is recommending that Texans vote in favor of Proposition 3 as well. Proposition 4 is an amendment that would require courts to notify the Texas Attorney General in a case that a lawsuit could impact the constitutionality of a state law, and TFR is recommending that Texans support that constitution as well. Proposition 5 is an amendment that would expand the definition of professional sports teams and give more organizations the ability to conduct so-called charitable raffles. This would expand gambling, and Texans for Fiscal Responsibility opposes dishonest efforts to expand the use of regulated gambling in the state of Texas, and we recommend that voters oppose Proposition 5. Proposition 6 is an amendment that would allow the Texas legislature to provide a property tax exemption for surviving spouses of first responders killed or fatally injured in the line of duty, and we're neutral on that amendment. Proposition 7 is an amendment that would allow banks, credit unions, and other financial institutions to conduct promotional activities such as savings promotion raffles, and TFR is neutral on Proposition 7 as well. You can find out more about our recommendations, our rationale for making those recommendations, and everything else at texasscorecard.com. We also have a PDF that you can take with you into the ballot box as you go vote. As a reminder, early voting is going on right now, and Election Day is November 7th. Next, we'll hear Tony McDonald interview State Representative Briscoe Kane, a conservative lawmaker who's leading the fight for free speech.
Well, it's good to have back on the program our friend State Representative Briscoe Kane, a conservative state rep from the Houston area. We had Representative Kane on a few weeks ago to talk about him being shut down from speaking at Texas Southern University, and we wanted to have Representative Kane back on to discuss another case of conservative citizens being treated as second-class citizens by their own, this time the legislature, not a university. So, Representative Kane, we have you on the line.
Yes. Hey, Tony. Thanks for having me back on.
You know, thanks for joining us. So I wanted to talk about this issue. This issue, you know, we had you on a few weeks ago to talk about the Texas Southern controversy, but we wanted to have you on to talk about something that's going on actually in the legislature or related to the legislature. It's a case of a group of pastors having their speech rights suppressed, while at the same time pro-abortion groups, left-wing groups are having special privileges, all kind of involved in your office. Tell us what's going on.
You know, Tony, I think the listeners are probably starting to see a pattern here that conservatives are being treated as second-class citizens and their rights are being ignored, specifically their free speech rights. And so everyone would know the Privacy Act, the one to keep, 14-year-old boys out of 12-year-old girls' locker rooms.
Right. And this is a bill that was, one of the hotly debated pieces of legislation during the most recent legislative session. This was your first session in, and so you were there debating trying to debate this issue despite obstruction. And then it was the hot issue, of course, during the special session called by Governor Abbott late in the summer. And so that was the issue that was kind of all issues. Property taxes, other things were big as well, but kind of the one that got the most publicity out of the session, right?
Yeah. Yes. And an interesting angle to this is that the parties whose speech was violated over this privacy issue, it's not their first time. And many may recall a few years back when the mayor of Houston subpoenaed the pastor's sermons, which still happens to be that those Houston five, those five pastors, are members of an organization called the Texas Pastor Council. And here they are again. The Texas Pastor Council has requested the ability to put up some signs in the Capitol extension advocating for the passage of the Privacy Act. It was kind of spurred by seeing the exact opposite. There were signs there in the Capitol saying things that were opposed to the privacy bill. So they thought, hey, you know what? Maybe we can share our opinion and show the opposite, the support of it.
Were these some constituents of yours or from their? They are pastors from the Houston area there.
Well, actually, it was the organization itself, the Texas Pastor Council, that wanted to put these signs up.
So they come down to the Capitol and they're walking through. The hot issue of the day is, are we going to pass legislation to make sure that 14-year-old boys are not showering with 14-year-old girls? There's a bunch of signs down there saying this is the most discriminatory, worst thing ever in the history of legislation. Of course, 14-year-old boys need to be able and allowed to shower with the 14-year-old girls in the high school locker room. These are the signs that people are seeing. And so the pastors say, hey, wait a second. I have a right to be down here and have my say as well. So they come to your office and say, hey, I want to put up my own signs. Am I following correctly?
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's really, really simple. They wanted to have a chance to say their side.
And so what transpired? So what did they do? They work with your office to put the signs up. The signs never made it up.
The signs never made it up. There's a procedure in place in order to, have a display in the Capitol. And one is that you have to have a member sponsor, a senator or a state representative of the House. And so they came to our office. We put out the proper paperwork and sent it in to the preservation board, person that's in charge of that. And very quickly we get a response that they wouldn't be allowed, that you're not allowed to advocate for the passage of something.
So what are the grounds on this? I mean, we're talking about signs that were already in place saying, hey, this is a bad bill coming from a left-wing group. So why can't the pastors have something that supports the bill?
A very simple answer and a disgusting one. From my view, it had purely to do with their identity. It was that they were Christians and they were conservatives. That was the grounds.
So what's the deal? I mean, the reputation we have here at Texas, the reddest of red states, which really isn't true, but that's the reputation. We certainly have Republican control of every branch of government in the state. Conservative Republicans are relatively dominant politically in the state, and there are certain pockets of resistance to that. But yet, the folks in charge of the Capitol, the Preservation Board, are coming in and saying, you know, left-wing ideas, A-OK, you know, right, not even right-wing, but Christian ideas, a Christian promotion of a common sense idea, that's not OK. Is that, I mean, what's going on?
You know, sadly, unless somebody is a listener to your radio program or a subscriber to the Texas Scorecard, they would not be aware that the First Amendment and rights of free speech are being so heavily violated in this state. You know, the mainstream media doesn't really report on it, but we have a government that's pretty run amok in violating and targeting conservatives' speech here in Texas. And that's really the problem. This is a kind of just a point on a timeline and a pattern of this behavior by our government, not just the state and local government, censorship and targeting of conservative organizations here in the state.
So our own Carrie Cheshire of Texas Scorecard ran an article a few weeks back about this situation, had looked in and done some open records requests. And so it actually turns out that the problem wasn't just, you know, one event of, you know, agreeing and allowing left-wing signage and then, you know, turning down a group of pastors. There's actually a pattern of this behavior. Can you tell us a little bit about what y'all found in the documents once you started actually confronting the Preservation Board?
Yeah, you know, so their rules are that nothing's really allowed to, you know, promote a specific viewpoint that maybe could be considered lobbying. So it's not supposed to be too political, which is has its own problems in and of itself. We don't run to that rabbit trail, but theoretically that also could be problematic because it's politically based and therefore a restriction on political speech, which is, it shares the highest rung of our free speech. But that we found that not only were they approving things that were very clearly promoting a specific viewpoint and promoting the passage of specific legislation, but they then singled these pastors out and silenced them. And in fact, we're just recently being made aware that maybe this has happened to another conservative group on the subject of abortion. But the documents are telling. The Planned Parenthood wanted to do something like this, and they quickly approved them. In fact, they're supposed to review any materials that they plan to do, and the Preservation Board didn't even ask for copies of that.
So another thing, so they approved Planned Parenthood for to put up, you know, signs and other things there in the Capitol Extension, ostensibly under these rules. They didn't even review what Planned Parenthood. They said, you know, you submit an application, your Planned Parenthood sign, you know, TBD. We'll figure out what we're going to say later, but you're approved. Whereas a group of pastors comes in and says, hey, I just want to put up the same, you know, kind of a counter display to something you've already approved from a left-wing group, and they shut them down.
Yeah, exactly. They actually violated their own rules. The Texas Administrative Code very clearly sets out a guideline that requires them to submit a sample of the exhibit. And so they didn't require Planned Parenthood to do that. They didn't require the liberal organization that was opposed to the privacy bill to do that. And to the point that, you know, you're not supposed to advocate for things in the kind of subject lines that we're able to see, the purpose of the event, we're seeing them accept things that are opposing the Privacy Act, or even something as innocuous that by something by Senator Brandon Creighton's office for the passage of some things dealing with special needs children. They were totally fine with accepting that. And so am I, actually. I have no problem with that. And I'm sure you might agree, we have no problem with free speech. Our issue is them targeting certain types of speech.
Yeah, we don't mind that these other groups are being approved. The problem is that they're shutting down the speech of pastors. So I guess the answer here, you know, if we're tired of being treated as second-class citizens in a state that, you know, conservatives dominate politically, the answer is you got to fight back. A group, this Texas Pastors Council, fought back in Houston against the subpoenas. I assume they're going to fight back against the Preservation Board in this case.
Yes, you know, that's an option they're exploring. These I'm very proud of these pastors. They're not willing to take their licks lying down. And one, it's a bad policy to be run over. And as you had mentioned, they weren't willing to lie down and be run over by the liberal mayor in Houston. And they're not going to be willing to just lie down and be run over this issue either.
Well, thank you, Representative Kane, for coming on to explain the issue to us. We'll have to continue to follow this as time goes on. I'm sure there will be a lot to learn as this conflict unfolds.
Agreed. And I'd like to come back on if you'll have me to give any updates.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Kane.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At texasscorecard.com or empowertexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's news digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at empowertexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
And to wrap up this episode of Texas Scorecard Radio, we'll hear from Michael Quinn Sullivan to give us a history lesson on Jose Antonio Navarro, a native Texan who never wavered in his commitment to Texas and never faltered in the fight for liberty.
We all know about William Travis and Stephen F. Austin, but Texas independence was secured because of thousands of people. Today I want to introduce you to one of my favorite of the founders of the Lone Star State. Howdy, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan with this week's Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary. Perhaps no one had a stronger, clearer vision for what Texas could be than Jose Antonio Navarro. Many of us have heard his great quote, "I will never forsake Texas and her cause. I am her son." Born and raised in San Antonio, he immersed himself in the laws of Mexico and Spain so that he could advance a free Texas. One of his closest friends was Stephen F. Austin, with whom he shared a lifelong friendship and an undying commitment to liberty in the Lone Star State. And let's be clear, he was a newcomer to the cause of Texas independence. Indeed, he began agitating for independence in 1812, long before it became a reality. Navarro had represented Texas in the Mexican Congress before becoming a leader in the Texas Revolution. He signed the Texas Declaration of Independence in 1836 and later the Republic's first constitution. You know the legendary Alamo defender Jim Bowie? Well, he was Navarro's nephew by marriage. In the summer of 1841, though, Texas President Marabou Lamar sent Navarro on a mission to convince New Mexico to secede from Mexico and join Texas. The endeavor was ill-planned by Lamar and ended with members of the expedition being taken prisoner by the Mexican army. Navarro was given a choice: renounce Texas or be executed. The Mexican army was displeased with his answer. Navarro was set for execution, but he escaped before they could finish him off. He returned to Texas ever more committed to the cause of liberty. Jose Navarro was long a proponent for joining Texas with the United States. He was a delegate to the convention of 1845, which was charged with debating the proposed annexation of Texas. That fall, the citizens of Texas overwhelmingly ratified annexation. Navarro went on to help draft the first state constitution of Texas and then served in the Texas Senate. When Jose Antonio Navarro died in 1871, all of Texas mourned. Navarro spent a lifetime working for a vision of what Texas could be. He never got to see Texas become the beacon of liberty that it is today, but he knew it was possible. And our reality is built on his work, his very real blood, sweat, and tears shed for Texas. Jose Antonio Navarro spent his lifetime working for the cause of Texas, not because it was easy, but because it was right. He never wavered in his commitment, and for that devotion, we are the beneficiaries. Over the next several months, you'll be meeting candidates running for the Texas legislature. In addition to gathering information about their stance on the issues facing Texas today, you might ask yourself if they will pursue liberty with the same dogged commitment as Jose Antonio Navarro. If they won't, we need to move on until we find someone who will. None of us can afford those who would forsake Texas or her cause. With a Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan.
All right, folks, that concludes our broadcast of Texas Scorecard Radio. I want to thank each and every one of you for listening and remind you to go to our website, texasscorecard.com, to catch the most up-to-date news on what's going on in the Texas legislature and around the state.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.